Grail Games 2026, Kingdom Death, Bloodborne and Kickstarter exclusives. Robert here, pull up a chair and let us sort the keeper from the shelf filler. A Grail game isn't about hype or FOMO, it's about a title that refuses to stay out of print because it earned asterisk the shelf space. It's the game that justifies the investment because of craft, depth, or rarity, or all three. If you're building a collector's cabinet in 2026, these five games aren't compromises. They're the ones that hold their place when the trends move on. None of these appeared in search results by accident. Each one exists now, is buyable now, and has a reason to be acquired now. Whether it's a Kickstarter exclusivity window closing, a deluxe edition that won't be reprinted, or a game that simply doesn't stay on shelves long enough for second thoughts. If this guide helps, using the Amazon links on the page is a simple way to support Puzzlewick at no additional cost to you. What actually makes a board game a grail in 2026? Let me kill the lazy definition first. A grail game is not just an expensive game, and it is not just a hard-to-find game. In collector culture, the word has a specific shape. A grail is a title whose supply is structurally capped, while demand keeps climbing. The cap can come from three places, and learning to spot which one applies is the whole game. 1. Design scarcity. Some makers simply refuse to chase volume. Kingdom Death exists in exactly one retail configuration at a time and sells almost entirely direct. 2. Format scarcity. A deluxe run or a Kickstarter exclusive box gets printed once and never again. When it's gone, the secondary market is the only door. 3. License scarcity, the most underrated of the three. A licensed game legally cannot be reprinted once the rights deal with the IP holder lapses, no matter how badly people want it. That last one is why a good licensed adaptation can quietly outperform a better, non-licensed game on the resale charts. The reason I'm writing this in 2026 specifically is that all five of these games sit at a visible inflection point right now, a fresh edition, a closing fulfillment window, a deluxe run winding down. The collector's mistake is waiting until Board Game Geek's marketplace has already repriced something. By then you're paying the tax. The window to acquire a grail at sane money is always before the consensus forms, not after. Why is Kingdom Death, Monster so hard to actually buy? The hard part is that Kingdom Death barely participates in normal retail. Adam Poots sells the core game almost exclusively direct, and the community's standing advice, repeated everywhere from Patreon buying guides to Board Game Geek, is to buy from the source and never pay a secondary markup. The Amazon listing exists, but it is not where the informed money buys. That changes how you plan. The traditional restock and new edition cadence has historically landed on the American Thanksgiving / Black Friday weekend. That's when both the original campaign and the 1.5 campaign launched. If you're hunting the core box or the white box expansions, the truly scarce stuff, Gorm, Dung Beetle Knight, the Twilight Knight, you watch that window like a hawk. On the 1.5 versus 1.6 question that confuses every new buyer, 1.6 is not a resculpt or a different game. The leap is essentially the legendary card pack, a bundle of critical card errata, resin ball shot, the DBK and Tyrant Data cards, the final lantern, plus rules that honor the original 2013 plastic. If you already own 1.5, you do not need to rebuy a £21 box, you need the update pack. If you own nothing, buy 1.6 and skip the confusion entirely. Either way, treat this as a campaign of 100 plus hours and permanent character death. That's the product, not the miniatures. Deluxe or collectors, the brass, Birmingham buyers fork the standing advice, buy the deluxe, quietly stopped being complete, and most guides haven't caught up. As of this writing, there is a genuine fork in the brass line, and choosing wrong means overpaying or underowning. That last upgrade is the real argument. Brass is a high-friction economic game, you handle those money tokens constantly, and the standard chipboard genuinely wears at the edges over a few dozen plays. The iron clays are a quality of life fix disguised as a flex. Insider footnote, 78 isn't a complete set. Roxley sells a 22-chip top-up sleeve so you can build the full 100-clay run, worth knowing before you assume the box is finished. The newer wrinkle is a separate collector's edition, built years after the deluxe around a different question, not how do we upgrade the components, but what would we actually want to own today? It is a distinct product at a distinct price, not a reprint of the Deluxe. My honest read, if you want the best playing copy at sane money, the Deluxe is still the answer, and the standard retail edition is the value play. The collector's edition is for people building a cabinet, not a table. Decide which collector you are before you check out, because the prices are not close. Is Gloomhaven's second edition really a different game? Yes, more than the word edition usually implies, and the difference is mechanical, not cosmetic. Cephalofia didn't repaint the first edition. Isaac Childers reopened the design and rebuilt the parts that aged worst over the campaign's 9 years on tables. The headline change is the one veterans should care about most, the original single sliding reputation track, one scale you pushed high or low for rewards, is gone, replaced by three faction tracks, the Shields, the Sect, and the Merchant's Guild. You're standing with each faction, now open some scenarios while locking others, and gates which items the shop will even sell you. The scenario tree was rewoven into a brand new story to support this, which means the faction narrative is fresh content, even if you've already finished first edition. That's the detail that flips this from refresh to replay. Add rebalanced mercenaries, redesigned items, refreshed art and minis, and the long tail of first edition errata folded in, and the verdict writes itself. If you're entering Gloomhaven now, second edition is the canonical version. Buy it without overthinking. If you own first edition and loved it, the upgrade is a considered choice, not an obligation. You're buying a new faction-driven story, not fixing a broken game. And if you only want to know whether the system clicks for you, Jaws of the Lion is still the cheap on-ramp, though it's a separate standalone, not part of this box. Container is back, but should you move now or wait? Of everything here, Container is the acquisition I find most interesting, because its Grail story is happening in real time. The original 2007 Container became a Grail by accident, a near-perfect economic engine, beautiful components, then out of print for the better part of a decade, while used copies drifted into absurd money. All play the board gamitables. Com folks brought it back via Kickstarter campaign in September 2025, and fulfillment has been rolling out through mid-2026. Most regions are landing around June 2026, continental Europe a touch later, into June-July, with the Container Deluxe shipping last as it's still in transit. So depending on exactly when you're reading this, standard copies may be arriving or already in hand, while the Deluxe trails behind. Hedge your expectations accordingly. A Deluxe, all-in bundle stacked the upgrades and expansions for those who wanted the full shelf. The production notes that matter to a collector, modern printing, sharper graphic design, more readable iconography, and a small thing veterans will appreciate, boats that are less jumbo than the chunky 2018 reissue. So why Grailworthy now? Because the inflection is the Kickstarter to retail handoff. If the new edition prints in healthy numbers, it stays cheap and you lost nothing by waiting. If it doesn't, you'll wish you'd grabbed it at $39. That asymmetry, small downside, real upside, is exactly the better collector wants to be making. Why does a licensed game like Bloodborne become a Grail? This is the section I most want collectors to internalize because it's the least intuitive. So why does it earn the cabinet? Because of how licensed games die. A game like Brass can be reprinted forever. The publisher owns it outright. A licensed game cannot. The day CMON's rights agreement to the Bloodborne IP expires, every Bloodborne box becomes unreprintable, permanently, by contract, regardless of demand. That single legal fact is the most reliable Grail mechanic in the hobby, which is why collectors quietly track expiring licenses the way investors track lockup periods. You're not betting on hype, you're betting on a clock that is already running. And the early evidence is already on the table. The Blood Moon box, the Kickstarter exclusive content that will never hit retail, is already out of print and trading on the secondary market, a preview of where the whole line goes when the license lapses. The base game, mercifully, is the part that's genuinely good on its own merits. A faithful, tonally correct roguelike with a strong solo mode and real mechanical depth across repeated runs. So the move is clean, buy the base box now because it's an excellent game you'll actually play, and understand that the license is a quiet flaw under its long-term value, not the reason to play it. That's the order that keeps you honest. How should a collector actually sequence these five buys if you're not buying all five at once? And most people shouldn't sequence by which window is closing fastest, not by which game you want most. Urgency and desire are different axes, and confusing them is how collectors overpay. Brass is the other clock. If you specifically want the deluxe, buy it while the run lasts. Deluxe runs end quietly, and the standard edition is the only thing guaranteed to stay in print. Buy the evergreens on your own schedule. Gloomhaven, second edition, and Bloodborne are both freshly in print with no near-term cliff, so there's no penalty for waiting until budget and shelf allow. Just buy second edition over the original, and buy Bloodborne for the gameplay with the license as a bonus floor. Kingdom Death is its own category. Don't impulse it. Plan around the direct sale restock cadence, budget for the time before the money, and only commit if 100-plus hour campaigns with permanent death actually describe how you play. If you have to talk yourself into it, that's your answer, and walking away is a perfectly good collector's decision. The cabinet you'll defend in 2030 is built on five games you genuinely use, acquired before the consensus formed, never on a shelf of regretted FOMO purchases gathering dust between plays. Final verdict. A Grail game collection isn't built on FOMO. It's built on identifying the titles that refuse to leave your table because they're too good to, and acquiring them before the collector's market reprices them. These five games earn their place through craft, scarcity, or strategic timing. Kingdom Death demands 100-plus hours and doesn't apologize. Gloomhaven 2nd Edition is the canonical version now. Container's Kickstarter window is closing. Brass, Birmingham's deluxe form won't last forever. Bloodborne proved that licensed games can matter. If you're building a collection in 2026 that you'll still defend in 2030, these are the games that earn the shelf space. Frequently asked questions. What makes a board game a grail worth collecting now in 2026? A grail game either exists in a limited form that won't be reprinted, deluxe editions, Kickstarter exclusives, or it has demonstrated staying power because of exceptional design depth. The key is acquiring it before the collector's market reprices it. These five games meet one or both criteria. They're available now, they won't flood the market later, and they've earned their shelf space through craft rather than hype. If you're asking the question, the answer is probably no. Kingdom Death is for players who commit to 100-plus hour campaigns and view the game as a long-term narrative investment, not an evening entertainment. If it doesn't, no amount of component quality will justify the cost. Should I hunt the original Gloomhaven or buy second edition? Buy second edition. It's the canonical version now, mechanically superior, artistically refreshed, with rebalanced classes and items. Cephalofia didn't release it to cannibalize the first edition. They released it because they made the game better. First edition values may hold or climb, but second edition is where you want to enter the game. Watch the secondary market closely as the exclusive window closes to understand how collector demand shapes value. Is Bloodborne worth acquiring if I'm not a From Software fan? Yes, if you value excellent roguelike board game design and strong solo mechanics. The license is attractive window dressing, but the game succeeds because CMON built solid mechanics that reward strategic depth and repeated plays. You don't need to love Bloodborne the video game to appreciate Bloodborne the board game. Should I prioritize Grail games or build a broader collection? Both strategies have validity. Collectors building broad libraries should prioritize games that teach different mechanics and themes. But if shelf space or budget is finite, Grail games offer better long-term value because they resist commoditization. Five exceptional games beat 20 good ones when resale and personal satisfaction are the metrics.